Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Pedophile Huntress. Tonight, I have a returning guest, Joanne. She has written a book, and she'll talk about that in a minute. You can hear her whole interview also on all YouTube and Anchor and all those places. But tonight, we wanted to come with you. We always gather with one common goal, that you'd be encouraged as a listener and just united in the love that we can bring, having lived through these situations. Tonight, we want to talk about grief. Grief is a huge giant, and depending on how you look at that giant can become your friend if you learn how to deal with it. But I think that many of us walk through life filled with grief, but instead of showing grief, we're alcoholics, we're angry, we overeat, go on and on and on, but often it's grief. And so that's just what we're going to talk about tonight. Grief does show up in a ton of different ways. And so I've asked Joanne just to kind of start there with it. I thought there was this really kind of beautiful post that I wanted to start with. I love The Body Keeps the Score. I think it's a remarkable work for many of us. And one of the things that people forget is what he represents here. And so I'm just going to open us with this, and then we'll go into our discussion. Van der Kalk starts, and he says, "We have learned that trauma is not just an event that took place sometime in the past. It is also the imprint left by that experience on the mind, brain, and body. This imprint has ongoing consequences for how the human organism," I like that he calls us an organism, "manages to survive in the present." Now, this is so important that people forget this part. Trauma results in a fundamental reorganization of the way the mind and brain manages perceptions. It changes not only how we think and what we think about, but also our very capacity to think. And I thought that was just such a great way to start when you think about grief. Yesterday, my husband's daughter was in. We had a wonderful weekend, and we were going to go to an antique store. And my mother loved antiques. My mother was also just very unkind to me and was an abuser as well. And, you know, throughout that store, Joanne, it was so sad. I had all of this. I was, "Whoa, look at this find." And then, damn, that reminds me of my past. And you know what I stopped and did? It was almost like I could hear God say, "I'm sorry, Jody." And no, here I've been counseling for 20 years. I've done all these things, but I still can't walk through a damn store without having recognition. Like he just said, it has changed the very capacity of what's left in me. And it doesn't matter what Christians believe or what they talk about. That's just right, Joanne. It's going to stay with me. And so that's just one example of how that's a loss. And so just to feel it in that moment, I could get through it. I found some beautiful stuff to bring home, but I was saddened. You know what I mean? That these experiences, trauma stays with us for, you don't just cut it off. People just think like it's just this little cancer and you cut it out. But I loved that he said it changes the very way that you think. Now we can work really hard on unchanging that, but I don't trust. There's a lot of things in me that are just really broken. And so tonight I just wanted us to kind of explore. I know, Joanne, that you lost your husband. How long ago did you lose him? Very recently.
July 2nd of last year.
Yeah, July 2nd. And so, you know, it just made me think. Joanne and I went to high school together, so we've been friends a long time. But of course, as we grow in adulthood, we don't stay close, but we've come back together in life. And, you know, some of the griefs that you could feel more when in your teen years and you're in high school, they kind of go away in your 20s and 30s because you're busy with life in general and all of these things. So talk to us a little bit about how you've managed that grief, because that was a sudden loss, right? Like you were not expecting him to go. I know that he had some issues, but I don't think they were death related, were they?
Well, I did believe that he was going to pass. My husband, so he was a very soft, kind, gentle person, wasn't a very strong person. And so he, you know, I mean, it was too much work for him to do what they wanted him to do. And I think that part of that was also, I think there was some medical malpractice, and I think that had they not sent him home for that 2.5 weeks and he just deteriorated rapidly, had they not done that, then I think he would still be here.
Wow.
But, you know, something that you said triggered something. And, you know, always with our loved ones, we never want to see them suffer.
Right.
Never. And for him, he was such a handy person. He always had to be up, you know, puttering with things and fixing things and doing things. To see him in that hospital bed was probably one of the most traumatic things as, you know, a loved one to see. And I knew that, like, I don't know, I think I've just got this spirit in me that kind of prepares me. And maybe it's as a result of our past, you know, that prepares me for when things might not go as we would expect them to.
We're almost expecting
that. But something
bad.
You said about it, because I'm also reading that book. Huh?
I said it's almost like
you don't
want to
expect
bad.
It, but
you don't want to expect it. I know, but I think it is this quiet little message, right? That whatever happens... Well, and that can also be a form of
that it might go.
Yeah, right. Keep going. You're fine.
Yeah. So I'm also reading that book, The Body Keeps Score. And it's amazing because I've got a couple friends that were talking about having frozen shoulder. And I was like, okay, have you done some work in this area? Because that's where it suggests that that's for. But for me, with grief, I think a really adequate description would be, it's like a ghost. It's like maybe your shadow even. It's always going to be there. And we get to determine what its power is or isn't. But a lot of times, and I wrote this down, some of these losses we really aren't aware of until we are much older and have done some footwork on healing. And some never do and walk around bitter, broken, and wounded, which is really, really sad.
Right. We see,
you know,
how many people do you meet at the grocery store like that, or standing in line and ordering coffee? You know what I mean? And then this just this accosting kind of spirit comes at you,
like,
and you're like,
oh
boy,
like
you need counseling.
Yeah,
right.
You do. They kind of remind me of Eeyore people.
Yes.
Oh, nothing's ever going right. It's always going to be crappy. It's, you know, those are, yeah,
exactly.
It's like, but I wouldn't say that, you know, that I expected him to die, but just knowing my husband the way that I know him, and he didn't want to be in that hospital bed. He didn't want to be there. And then I saw the look on his face. And when you know somebody, you know when they've given up.
Oh, right.
And so, yeah, I've, you know, been holding in there. And I did hear from someone at our church that said that they sent him a message for me. And they said that he was sorry he left me. And but that he knew that I could handle this.
Wow. That's tough.
That doesn't like reach out and grab you by the dang neck, you know, but.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So,
you know, that, something about that's hard is, but we know you can handle it. You know, I was sitting on the couch. I have bone on bone. I need a hip replacement. And it's really hard to sit after sitting all day at work. And I come home and, you know, there's something though about, why don't I just get up and take care of myself and go lay down? But I want to take care of everybody around me. I want to be strong enough and just sit there in excruciating pain to watch this movie so I can be close to the family. And I just think, why am I doing this? They wouldn't even want me to do this. This is dumb. But I think that we put too much on ourselves as a result of coming through all this as well. And the pain that you get when you come through childhood trauma is such a normal that grief and loss is just kind of a steady. I mean, it's terrible to say, but it does bring a resilience in us that maybe we shouldn't have. Maybe we should give up sooner than we do. You know, I just heard you saying, I'm not going to let this sneak
in. Totally get that.
Right? Shouldn't we give up sooner sometimes, Joanne?
Well, the other thing is too that I see in that is we have been, because of our past and the traumas that we've been through, we have become, you know, helpers. And so we help everybody else, even sometimes to our detriment, what you're speaking of right there. And I've, since losing Randy, I've realized that I absolutely positively need to say no to something so that I can say yes to me. Yes. And that's hard. It's really hard. I mean, I just turned 60 for Pete's sakes. Right. And here I am finally learning that it's okay to say no. It's right. okay to take care of me. And, you know, but again, I know I'm a healer. I know I'm a helper. I know that, you know, those things, and you know, let's not say that those things make us strong. We choose to become strong as a result of the things that have happened to us. That's our choice. We're doing that, you know, and right. that, you know, yes, true. We are strong. But we need to be strong for ourselves. And I'm, you know, finally doing things where I'm just like, I had to say, I can't do this. And so, you know how hard that is for a fixer. Right.
I know. And so one of the things I want to talk about are the tools you use to go through grief. Because I've watched you and I follow you. And I see that after your husband's passing, you've done things actually to respond to that grief. You've gotten a job. You've been doing a lot of art. So talk a little bit about what that felt like when your husband, now you know he's gone, you come back into your house and you've got to decide how you're going to go forward in that grief, right? And this is actually with any grief that we find ourselves right. in, but this particular grief, what did that feel like?
Well, like I said, I've always been independent and dependent mostly upon myself. And part of that was because my husband was, you know, a very soft, kind, gentle person. He wasn't a strong, you know, male role. And again, me being the independent, you know, healer, fixer that I am, I didn't give him the opportunity probably to be more than he was, mm-hmm. you know, those realizations, you know, and literally, I just kind of like fly by the seat of my pants most of my life. I don't have a plan. I don't have a, you know, I just like, okay, well, this isn't working. So I need to do something else. Right. You know,
and so, right.
Just get it done, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, I just, kind of just start working on things. And like, I've had to sell a bunch of things to manage to make, you know, my mortgage payments mm-hmm. and just, this isn't working. And so then you just keep trying and you know, you might hit a door and you're like, okay, this isn't for me. And then you try another thing and, you know, it's.
So do you think too, though,
right.
Do you feel like the option that you choose is to keep going, just go. I remember one time, it makes me interested. I was talking to Redmond one time and he said, you don't think you're depressed, Jody. And I said, I'm not depressed. And he said, well, there's two sides of depression. And, you know, grief often will bring a depression if you stay with it too long. And he said, right. there's two sides. One person stays very agitated and the other one won't get out of bed. Now you won't allow yourself to stay in bed. But you do stay going all the time. And, you know, it really helped me know that, you know, that run kind of thing. Just now at 60, am I stopping? And also my hip, I can't run like I used to, unfortunately, which is very difficult for me, right? Because it kind of grounds us and it makes us immobile in a way so that we don't have as much of that. But I think that's really fascinating that you say that, because I think it's a really common response for people who will not give in to depression. Well, I'm not depressed. I'm not going to stay down. And then we go. Like, you know what I mean? And go ahead.
Also, the thing about depression is like many people actually choose to camp in it. Oh. I wouldn't say that I'm depressed, because my husband's leaving the earth brought me freedom. I have never lived alone in my 60 mm-hmm. years in a group with a family.
Interesting.
Married, husband and children, you know, then had husband and or children and, you know, whatever. And so I have never lived alone in my 60 years. Well, wow. 59, because I was 59 when he passed. And so it's like, oh,
right. You know,
I can put something away and it's going to be there. And like, so it was kind of it let me out of my cage. Like, I think I was a pretty little birdie in a cage, you know.
Interesting, right?
And the cage opened. And so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, ground that you can cover with that. You know, do I miss him? Absolutely. You know, my washer just started leaking all over the ground and he would have known how to fix this. And I'm like, I have to use brains that aren't typically my brains.
Right.
It's like, right. But again, you know, as the person that I am, I'm a realist. And could I stand to see him lying there in that hospital bed? Absolutely not. That's not who he was. Mm-hmm. And, but again, you know, the strong person, the person who's always just like, and the other part of that too, is for me, with the things that happened in my childhood, I have a very strong desire to fight. Now, a long time ago, and I do talk about this in my book, where I had a vengeance for the men that abused me as a very young girl. The first two were my main targets of vengeance as, you know, a young girl. And I dreamed and imagined doing awful, awful things to them. Mm. And, but that vengeance was how I kept my, my ability to keep going. Like I might fall, you know, and something would trip me and I would, you know, lay down and lick my wounds and heal, but I was always going to get up, but I was going to get up to exact that vengeance upon them. And now I get up because I can. I don't feel that vengeance anymore, that hatred, that desire to hurt them, they hurt me. And so now, but that desire, you know, has come about in another way of, you know, so many things have taken away my voice, my ability to protect myself, to feel safe, to live the life I should have lived, that I'll be blankety blanket darned that I'm not going to let anyone ever take that from me again. And so that strength again, though, is coming back. Like, it's kind of like life is a board game. And I'm not going to let you take my turn or take away, you know, it's my right to have my turn.
Love it.
And so that battling to stay active and to stay up and upright. Yep. And again, as we age, you know, when we go down for a little bit longer this time and we're learning to rest. And again, you know, my knee being this thing, your hip is, you know, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, why am I picking on myself? My knee needs to heal. I've got
exactly. To
know, and do what I need to do, put heat and cold. And, you know, so that desire to make my life better. And we do have some power over that now.
And you know, so, Joanne, I have that hugely in me too. And it's funny. And I brought that up because we can use all kinds of tools to survive. And I think that even counselors, it's kind of why I really wanted to start this podcast, is I've had to go to counselors often just to know what my mind was doing, what PTS looked like, what a flashback was. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a demon that coming out of the woods. It was the dead lady, all these things. But I think that it helps to talk to us because one of the things you just said is, hey, I'm not depressed. You guys can call it what you want. For me, those are survival skills. And I'm just like you. And I want to talk about this for a minute because it's funny how no matter what we go through here, you've just lost your husband a few months ago. And I love that you've rallied. And honestly, I really honor and respect that you say this is my time now and you're going to look at it positive. I just really honor that. And I think you're being very honest in that. And it's a very cool way that you've given yourself that freedom. If I ask you this question, I wonder if you'll find resonance in it. I often feel like with my hip this way, I feel so out of control and so out of sorts that I've always felt if I was broken outside or broken inside I could hide. But when my body betrays me, I always feel like a bird's going to come along and just pluck me off or something. Can you talk about that all? I hate being broken on where people can see it, where I can't move, where it takes my strength. It bothers me incessantly. I want to fix it. And I keep hearing you say, I want to fix this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you would say that. I think that is a spirit of perfectionism. Mm. And I've seen that in a couple of people. We can't, you know, we can't lay that down because, oh, somebody might think. And I absolutely know that I am flawed. And I know that I am broken and I know that I'm wounded. And honestly, I didn't even know that. And you were talking also about, you know, techniques and I didn't realize that I had triggers. Mm-hmm. Until I read this book by Dan Bielender, The Wounded Heart. I didn't even know what they were. And then I realized that I had them.
Right.
For mine, you know, they can be a moment, they can be a smell, they can be a taste, they can be a song. Something can happen, it can trigger that flashback. You know, I didn't know that I had those. And so I forgot where we were going.
It's okay. We were just talking about not liking being broken.
I am flawed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it. Obviously, it's hard for us doers to always be doing, but I've also realized that I'm super hard on myself because of the things that have happened to me. And so I'm trying to give myself grace.
Well, 60. Right.
Okay.
Right. I know. And I do think we'll never have the answer to all things. And quite honestly, I don't want the answer to all things because I've explored a lot of tragedy, but I think it's really important.
Right.
Like, and the older we get, one of the things that my counselor did say, and I really did trust him. I didn't agree with everything he said, but one of the things that he said to me was, as you get older, it's harder to hide the truth. The truth comes out. And I think this is why people turn to deeper addictions, you know, turn to more hate, turn to more vengeance, whatever it is. And so, you know, part of that is learning what a trigger is. What is that trigger? And I was thinking about that with this hip, this particular pain in my body or whatever. And I remember there were a few times when I was very little and my father would hold my ankle when he was raping me. And I, you know, I turned 4 when we left that house, but I have a very vivid memory of that. And my ankle hurt so bad I couldn't walk. So the unfortunate part was that got stuck in me that I couldn't get out of that room. And see that trigger of that, if I can't go, I had this horrible dream last night that I couldn't wake, I couldn't scream. I was screaming for help. And you said something earlier. And here I am 60 and I've been through all this healing. Oh my God. And Joanne, you know what? I have healed. I know God. I read the word of God daily. I talk to him 50 times a day. And last night I went to sleep and I had this horrible dream that no matter how much I used to have them all the time when I was little, but I don't get those dreams often anymore.
I did.
But you know what? I really feel like, so I had to really explore that today. And part of it was being broken. I feel like I'm trapped. And when I'm trapped, I'm going to be hurt. And it's very hard to break that. When you're learning from 1 to 5, I was taught that if you can't get out of that room, you're going to get hurt more. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know all the triggers and we can't figure out all things. But you know, that put when you said, no one's going to take my voice. And see, what happens is we can't allow grief to, we can't allow retribution to. We can't, you know, I my voice got me to a place of healing. And Joanne, I agree with you so much. I'll never give it to anybody. I won't. And so I just think that was interesting that you said, one of the things about being alone is it can get lonely, but I was single for a long time and I loved it because I felt safe there. I got lonely and I wanted to get up and have coffee with people. Like I didn't live with anybody for 13 years, but I was safe. You know what I mean? And so there is a part of that I was alone for 13 years. I loved it. I had a really good job. I get up and I could go to happy hour 5 nights a week. And I did. I met girlfriends and, you know, I really got into counseling.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead and talk about that for a second. Yeah. It's, I think, but I meet a lot of survivors who stay changing things. Go ahead and start.
I don't know what the Lord has for me and you know what I mean, but I do know that I'm really enjoying changing things around my home and, you know, making things more mine, things that I enjoy and stuff like that. It's, but you know, I didn't not have that before. Randy didn't care what the house looked like. He didn't care what the decor was. If I was happy, he was happy, you know? Right. So, but there are still some things that I, you know, had because he lived here. And so like I took all the Eagle stuff out. That was his thing, you know, and people that, you know, chose to keep that and stuff. But yeah. And you know, it's funny also, my mother would always tell me, Why do you have to talk about that? Why are you talking about that? Why do you always have to get involved? Why is that any of your business? Can't you just stay out of it? And the only answer was no, Mom, because it happened to me.
Right.
And then she acted like she never knew. And I'm like, whatever. But anyway,
Joanne, that's such a huge
thing. I was so tired.
Your mic's cutting out a little bit. Yeah. Can you say that again?
Well, it seems to be okay. Maybe I moved away or something.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, so- it's just, we have to hold on to, you know, and because it was so important to me, just like it's you, it's important to you that we talk about these things because we are the light bearers for the people who haven't admitted what's happened to them, who aren't brave or strong enough. And I can't tell you how many times I've had people message me and say, yes, your story is my story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just knowing that I had the strength to do something that my mother didn't even do. Now, I don't know if you remember, my mother, my grandma, and my aunt were keeping the secret in the family. And because they didn't want my dad, my grandpa, And truthfully, I wouldn't want them to go to jail either. But the bottom line is things like this should never be hidden. It should never be
covered at the
up.
But and think about children the cost though. Hurt. Right. This is at the cost of the children, so somebody wouldn't find out. This has to change. And until the day I go home, if it's just 1 hour a week of my life, I'm going to spend that time saying, you probably don't know you have triggers. You probably didn't know this was abuse. It was your normal. But these human beings that don't want to have an adult feel uneasy, for God's sake, feel uneasy and help these children. I mean, think of the cost to that. Oh, kids keep being abused because dad can't find out. What the hell is that? What is that? Honestly, no. Joanne.
And, you know, I'll tell you another thing, too, that I firmly believe. Both my mother, my grandmother, and my aunt suffered from manic depression and bipolar. Right. And I swear to you, that book we're reading talks about how these things affect your body.
The body keeps
they
the score?
They affect it.
You bet it
Alzheimer
does.
And dementia.
Yep.
Yes. Alzheimer and dementia are huge in And I'm just like, and here I am, I don't take medicine for, you know, bipolar, manic depression, because, and that's the other difference too, is we all need to remember that we're all very different. Not everybody is you and I, that's very, you know, common.
And that's fair.
But, and I forgot, but, I'm also extroverted. One major difference between me and a lot of other people is, when it comes to your memories, some people bury it, some people hide it, some people, you know, and all of those types of things that happen as a result of the trauma that we've gone through. I am a very direct person. So my memories, I call it my longhouse. When we went to see Chief Laluska as kids, Chief Laluska said, "We don't build another house. When my son gets married, we add another end on and our house gets longer." That's kind of how I look at my memory. So my memory starts at the age of five when my molestation started happening, and it goes from there. There's no walls. There's no doors. There's no, you know, secret rooms. There's none of that. And so my memory is literally just like a big old long house. And other people, you know, they bury it, they build a wall, they dig it, or they, whatever they do, you know, build another person to deal with that so that they don't have to look at that. But I'm not one of those people. So like I said, my memories are, you know, they're just like in a chronological order in my brain of how they happen.
Right. Well, and you're,
but not everybody is that.
No, and it's true, but your abuser was out of the home, right?
Correct.
Yes. And so
I have to tell you that I am very grateful for that.
Yes. Because you know what, Joanne? It's a whole different story. Yeah. When your abuser is in the home and you have that extended fear constantly coming at you, children have to develop different skills then, because you got to run home and, you know, not that you had loving arms that were going to help you heal and all that, but you got away from that abuser. When the abuser is in your home,
I didn't have that.
Yeah, it changes the very psychology of how a child has to survive. I know that was me. I watched my siblings change through
it,
and I've watched how it's been with them today. And I've talked to many people where it happened very early, and then it never stopped until their teen years. When that happens, your mind almost wipes it away because you have to. You can't tolerate the abuse anymore, and it just goes into some kind of trauma amnesia, is what they call it today. I call it a gift to God, so you can get up and go through the next day without killing yourself. They can call it what they want, but you know, but it trauma amnesia does it's a helpful way to put it, because it's extended abuse all the time. So anyway, that is, and I'm thankful that I think that helped you survive that and have that. See, one of the things that was really broken in me was I wasn't mad at anybody. I just wanted away from everybody. I was so broken by the time I left my parents. I didn't have anger and hate. Very like one time I wrote this really angry letter at my dad. I was just so broken and sad. You know, I had more just leave me the fuck alone kind of attitude. I didn't want to go back and hurt anybody. I was so, to this day, I'm still more saddened about who my parents were than want to hurt them more, because they were so damaged and broken. What could I ever do to make them worse? You know, there was nothing I could do to hurt them, because broken people, you can't. And I just needed to move away. So I love, though, that you had that warrior spirit. I certainly found a warrior spirit. I think that warrior spirit kept me alive in their home. I think finding Jesus, he came to me before I left that house. And so I was 3. I didn't really know him. I didn't really know his name till I was 8, you know, that whole thing.
Praise the Lord for that.
Oh, it saved me. But, you know, these tragedies are long. And I think that often people aren't aware. I hear so many people say, until I listened to that, I didn't realize it was abuse. They don't know any different. And so, you know, that's a real thing. And I think
Because that's what you grew up with.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, one of the things.
That's what you grew up with. And so you didn't know it was abnormal.
Exactly, Joanne. I know your story, and you had some children. Weren't they cousins that were also then started to be abused? Did they come and tell you, or were there signs? Just because now that we're on this, it's always a good territory to tell people what signs to look for in children. There are signs of abused kids. And how did you know your cousins were getting abused?
They came and they confided in me. And then I went to their house and he tried it on me as well. And that was the same weekend that I held a old hickory butcher knife against his throat and threatened him at the age of 11.
I love you. You were not again.
What could I have done? But know what's interesting is he didn't move. He didn't try to take it away. He didn't. It was almost like he wanted me to. And let me tell you, Jody, I think that that God saved my life that day, because my aunt came out of the bathroom and I said, "Oh, I was just trying to ask Uncle so-and-so where this knife went." And I was like, she had never done anything. But, you know, and I would have been put away in a mental institution for children, you know, criminal children. And it would have been worse. Believe me, it would have been worse.
Do you think you would have gone forward with hurting him? Now, were you protecting your cousins too at that time? Was it not just you?
So another thing is family dynamics. Mm-hmm. So I'm the oldest of all of the grandchildren. I am the head of that. That is my job. And so I took that job very seriously in protecting my siblings as well as my cousins. And, you know, I was just like, so again, when I went to tell my mom took me to my grandma's.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma said it's being handled. And then I came home.
That.
And
right.
then a year later, because of pain, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to kill myself. And I'm like, I can't let my cousins kill themselves. You know, so I reported it myself.
Wow. You know, and that is, it's phenomenal. Now, did you stay close to those cousins?
No, we were separated. My aunt, threw up the biggest stink. She told everybody that I was a prostitute and that my uncle, didn't want to touch me.
Oh,
and so
God.
I got pissed off. And, so that's why I'm
making
these lies about them. And then she told them that I was also, she told them that I was also drug addicted. And so I was trying to pimp myself out
at
to 12. Get money for the
You're
drug.
12 at 12.
That didn't start until, right. At that 12. Didn't start until I was 15, you know?
Right. You know what, Joanne, though, you're either nuts or sluts. And that's always what but the stories they come up with are actually more far-fetched than he's a lech and he's been abusing me. Why, you know, families, families don't want to lose the family. What kind of family is that you want to hold on to? You know, I get the whole
Right?
family
I'm
card,
just
but
blown away.
it's just a shit box of nothingness that you just
Right.
can't bring with you. You know what I mean? You can't. But one of the things that you said about your mom, it makes me think about, now I can't remember what chapter this is in, but there's a quote in my book that, and I can't remember the person, and I'm sorry, and it's paraphrased, but one of the things is she's talking to her mother, and her mother says to her, "Why do you always have to bring up all of this stuff?" And she says, "Mother, where am I going to put it down?" And you know what, Joanne, that the what we're doing together is sharing that burden one to another. We're coming together and we're sharing our burdens, and that helps ease that load. Because isn't that true? Where am I supposed to put it down if I don't come to you? You know, like I've heard other mothers tell them when they come, a mother will
Yeah.
say, "Well, okay, now you've told." And this was a woman who got raped from the time she was 5 until she was a teenager. And you know what the mother said? "Well, now that you've told, we're only going to tell people that need to know, and who needs to know is you and me. End of story. Put it down." Where am I going to put it down? That's not putting it down. That's actually carrying it with
No,
you.
it's not giving you the freedom to let it go either. Good Lord, you know, like I said, and you know, for me, one of the molesters literally said to me, "If you don't let me do it to you, I'm going to do it to your little sister."
Oh, of course, they know exactly what to say.
What choice did I have?
Well, you didn't have a
What
choice
choice? You
anyway,
tell
but they
me.
just, yeah, they don't want you to fight.
Right.
Right. They don't
Right.
want you to fight. And
And
so, yeah.
yeah, I just, yeah.
Well, and it's so crazy what I hear kids say. And some kids, you know what some kids will say is, actually, he didn't threaten me at all, but he gave me a cigarette when we were done. You know what I mean? Like, there's always, they know the children too. And that was a, you know, really broken child. But for a cigarette, you know, and you don't really have a choice. The truth is, they're gonna hurt you anyway. They just don't want you to fight as much, right? And so
That's true, for sure. Yeah, you know.
it's
Yeah.
really true. Well, talk to me a little bit about your YouTube channel. You have a YouTube channel. Tell me what you're doing on there.
I do. I'm trying to ramp it up a little bit more and get to where I can actually go live on my YouTube channel. I thought I had met their, you know, quotas of getting over 50 people, and now I've got 57 and I still can't go live. So I have to do more shorts now. But yeah, the reason why I want to do that is because I took my book back from my publishing company because I was getting ripped off for no other reason than that's the truth.
Right,
And they were
right.
getting like 95% and I was getting 5%. And so that made me mad. And I'm like, no way, this isn't working. But I wanted to ramp up my book and, you know, also do the same thing that you're doing is share with people that, see, the one thing is you and I are probably not the normal abused person. We have made a life. We have gone, we've worked hard, we've healed. And healing isn't the end all be all. I don't think we're ever going to be healed
Right,
fully
completely.
until we go to meet Jesus, bottom dollar.
100%. I agree with
But
that
the bottom line is,
100%.
you know, and I talk about this in my book is, you know, and it's that's why it says finding joy in the journey. I didn't think it was possible. And if you'd have
Right.
asked me many, many years ago, I would have said, "What are you talking about? You're flipping crazy. Joy with this, you know, what I've gone through." But the
Right.
bottom line is if we work. And I'm not saying that we've got rose-colored glasses on about what happened to us, because I don't think either one of us do.
No, we
But the
don't.
bottom line is, what you focus on is what becomes important. And there is other things in life besides what happened to us that bring us joy. But for me, I have found that admitting what happened to me, being honest about it, sharing about it, has helped other people process what they've gone through, and it shares that burden. And you know, the word talks about that.
Yeah,
You
it
know,
does.
it says, you know, a duty shared makes light work. I mean, you know, I'm paraphrasing, and that's not quite what
Right.
it is. I know, you know,
And it
but
says share your
when we
burdens
help
one
each
to
other,
another. Right. Right. It just says
exactly,
it
and when
straight
we help
out. It
each
really
other,
is true.
it's not so heavy. It's
Yes.
just not so heavy. And again, like I said, I never ever thought that I would have joy. And I never thought that I would not be sad about the things that happened to me. It
Right.
sucks. We didn't want it, need it, or deserve
Right.
it. But the bottom
Right.
line is it happened. You can't refute that. You can't, like, you can put it under a rug, but let me tell you what happens to that. It's kind of like putting a dirty band-aid on a wound. That wound is going to fester, it's going to get infected, and it's going to come back in a way that you never expected it to. We have to address the things that have happened to us.
Yeah,
we do.
Well, we do. And I think that's a really important, point. When I wanted to talk about grief, grief is something that I can get through quicker now. I mean, it used to take me out. It was incredibly painful. And it was like this hill in front of me with fear, but the grief of watching a woman's life extinguished, the grief of seeing yet another rape, and then a rape by my brother, and then, you know, it just on and on and on. Today, I don't live that. Very seldom do I have a dream like I had last night. And those are just human things. We are a human organism, as Van Kessel says, which I think is kind of cute. But, you know, we are, it's the humanity that's in us. And, you know, this morning I had a hard night. I must have been up 20 times. My hip was hurting me. And then I hit the road. I live in Montana. And the ice, the lake is now completely frozen, and the mountains and the landscape with the snow. I just had to stop and say, that's a moment of joy, Joanne, just to God, I never knew this existed. You know what? Thank you so much that I can even feel this moment and breathe it in. And those are the truly, I mean, I have a lot of really beautiful things in my life now. But isn't the ultimate healing then giving back and helping that one person that's there? And so I could tell you how great my life was, but what it didn't help me when I was sitting in deep, deep pain. I wanted to know what it really felt like to another human being. I wanted to know what the journey looked like, not just, you know, everybody shows up. I'm so good. God's so good. My life is so good. I have a great husband and 2.5 kids, and I'm a millionaire, and I live in this wonderful house. Walk with me on my beautiful property. I just want to go, screw you. This is not what I want to hear. And so, you know what? I do have a really nice life. I'm not going to share that. I mean, I share that, but you know what I'm trying to say? We both do it, because I've watched you, and you do very fun things. You go to dinner and you have dinner party ends, and you had a beautiful 60th birthday party. But the ultimate healing is giving.
It was the best. It was the best birthday I've ever had.
Let me hear about it. Go. Let me hear about it. So I saw you. I mean, you had it at a Mexican restaurant, right?
We did. Okay, so Mexican food is my love language.
I love it too. Behind Italian.
I love Italian too. I love Chinese and Mexican. Those are probably, but you know, it goes Mexican and then Chinese and then, you know, Italian. But anyway, I wanted to say something that was ticking in my brain. Anyway, going back to that, we didn't deserve it, we didn't want it, and we didn't need it. You know, we didn't like it, you know. But the bottom line is, things happen. And again, where you put your focus is what changes that. The other day, I had a moment like you had when you were driving, you saw that beautiful scenery. For me, nature is, and again, that's nature. The sun, when it shines in and you can see it lovingly caressing the trees, and it's only on that side where the sun is, those things. But again, where are we putting our focus, Jody?
Yes.
We are able to see those things, but we're stopping to do it. When you are in that pain and that grief, or the woundedness and the brokenness of the things that have happened to us, you aren't able to do that because you are focusing on the things that happened to you, the woundedness. You know, and again, like I said, I never would have envisioned the fact that I would find joy in just the simple, beautiful, you know, the sun's coming up and it's touching the you know, the trees and everything, and leaving that golden, splendor on everything, you know. But again, we've done that footwork.
Well, and healed. You know, I can actually,
and again, it doesn't negate what.
Right. No. And I can talk about that. Actually, I think the very hope that I would get to the place I am today carried me through that time. I can remember thinking this will pass, because there's also those beautiful scriptures that say that joy comes in the morning, you know, and all of these things that I knew enough scripture to know for a fact that God would never allow me to live in a life like this, because I could live in and out of my reality if I just kept running enough and stayed busy enough and all of these things. But when I really took a dive to say, God, I need to get this stuff out of me, because I needed to quit doing the things I was doing, running around with bad guys and drunk all the time and, you know, just out constantly and not being a good parent and all of those things, I knew that I had to change from the inside out. And I knew it was going to hurt, Joanne. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't of the mindset like I'm going to go to the healing. I mean, you know, I'm going to go to a counselor for 1 year and I'm going to be good. Like I knew this was going to be work. And I had a very honest counselor. It's a
lifelong process.
It's a lifelong process. But the goal is, and I think that to me, my strategy is to always, I end my book with, I remain forever hopeful. No matter what comes to me, I know I'm going to get to joy in a minute. I just might not be here right now, but it's coming. And I know I just hold on to God. Sometimes even like through my hip pain, I'll just say, God, I'm going to have to stay real close to you right now because I'm struggling, really struggling. But you know what? I can smile and enjoy life. You know, right. So I think, Joanne, that's what, to me, what that means, put your focus somewhere. You can't always get up every day and be like, woohoo, I'm going to be happy. Like that's just, that's whimsical and that's not reality. But to always cast your gaze forward moves us in this perpetual motion forward, right? Like it's almost like when I couldn't, I'd be struggling back with pain. It's like I would take a rock tied with a rope on it and throw it and say, Jesus, catch that and bring me with you. And it would work. Like I'd get pulled with him, but it was, that was the hope that got me through. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does. Because, you know, and here we are at the age of 60 where we can go, we can look back and we can go, hey, I have 60 years of experience. That's telling me is going to be okay.
Exactly.
We are going to make it through this. Yeah, it's going to be crappy maybe for, you know, a day, a week, a month, whatever. But we have that hope that we have been able to build because of the 60 years and because of Christ, you know, and God being there for us. You know, that's absolutely true.
And, you know, that makes me think when you say that, you and I play off each other, but it makes me think when I learned the definition of functional versus dysfunctional, the way that my counselor explained it to me was, he said, Jody, dysfunction looks at a problem and says, I don't know how I'm going to get through it. What functioning people say is, I see a problem. I know I might not have the answer, but I know I'm going to get through this. It's the only difference between functional and dysfunctional. When I heard that, I'm like, I can do that, because you don't have to have always have the answer, but you do cast that rock of hope in the future and say, I'm going to get through this. I don't know how, but that's so it's living functionally is what you just described, which is beautiful. I hope you cried some when you lost your husband.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I know. I had to add that because nobody that doesn't, you know what I mean? If they don't know you, they're going to think you didn't cry. I know that you grieved him. I know you did.
No.
I know. What were you going to just say? I know, but I know you.
Yeah, I was reading a book by Tom Ziegler, Zig Ziegler's son, and he was talking about the fact that oftentimes we get stuck because all we see is the problem.
Yes.
So what we need to do is we need to think of becoming problem solvers instead of being stuck by the problem. So our job is to find out how to get out of the problem. And if we do that, we can turn it around. You know, we don't feel stuck.
Well, and that's
that. And so I thought that was really awesome. He said, so we're problem solvers. And again, we have 60 years of problems being solved, and that gives us hope so that we know that it will again.
Well, I can say maybe 20. I don't know that I was so good at it my first 40 years. I was in a terribly abusive relationship. And one of the things I can say, well, and I guess that still brings experience. If you're in an abusive relationship, it is very hard to heal in those, because what abusers do is make you look them. They make you, everything that you're thinking is ran through what they need, how they see it. You know, God, I love that. God always says, Jody, you see you. And when you take your eyes off the abuser, off the person who hurt you, off the pedophile, expose them by telling the story, but then take your eyes off them and put them back on you. Mm-hmm. Then, Joanne, we become problem solvers for ourselves, because we can't, the only person we can change is us, but we're always trying to change everybody around us, right? That doesn't work. So
I learned a long time ago, you can't change anyone but yourself. No. The only one you can change is you. This is all you can control right here. And that was, but you know, still, I think sometimes we try it as, you know, helpers. We either like, well, if I just love them enough, they'll get it, you know? Yeah.
Right. So with the loss of this person, I'm curious, what would you say about, you know, grieving? Because some of the things that are really hard when you have childhood loss is like with your husband, when you grieve, you get to say you loved me and I loved you, and you get to hold on to these good things. One of the hard things about grieving childhood loss is, what do you hold on to, Joanne? You know what I mean? Like, you have to just grieve and throw it away. Like, you don't have this good thing to bring with it.
Right.
And so that's, you do have to find a place to put it down. And for me, I leave that at the feet of Jesus. I don't know what other people do, but I'll just say, Lord, you got to take this, because I just, mm-hmm. I got to get it out of me. Because your grief, while it's very real and valid, he left love with you, and he left these beautiful things. Like you said, he'd be fixing that. Like, I know that he knows I can do it, because he understood who you were and there was real love there. But grief, with when there's just pain and agony, yeah, is a very difficult thing to move through, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I know that I have 30 years of memories. We raised 5 children together. We bought this home. We raised 3 dogs together. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many things that, you know, and again, I have them, you know, around here, things that he built. But Jody, I have to tell you, the day that he died, I never imagined walking into the hospital as a married woman and walking out a widow. But when I walked out, I saw the most beautiful sunset, and I had a vision. And it's really hard to argue with such beautiful things, but I literally saw him walking through the gates of heaven.
It's beautiful. And
when he did, our dogs came to greet him, my 4 boys, both of my boys. And then from there, it was like, you know, in choir and chorus, how they stood on those bleachers. So it was his mom and dad, and my mom and dad, and our grandparents, the ones
beautiful.
That I knew on his side. But after those people, Jody, it was the angels. It was so bright. And I actually
beautiful.
Created his urn out of that memory.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful.
I painted the box the same color. Guy was with the clouds on it, and for him it was an eagle, that because he loved eagles, and so I put an eagle flying through the sky on his urn.
Oh, that's just beautiful.
And it was like, how can you argue with knowing where they are, knowing that he's not in pain and he's not fighting?
Right.
You just can't argue with that.
That no, absolutely not. It's so beautiful.
And you know,
Joanne, that is
like,
just beautiful.
And
I do believe that God helps us see the beauty in that, because it's really the start of life to me. Death is just the start of life. There's so much death right here that I have lived on this earth. Straight
freedom.
Up death, that, you
it's
know what?
Freedom.
It's freedom. Yeah, crossing over is freedom. I don't want to leave my grandbabies or my children, but I don't have any problem when it's my turn to go, because I know that that is just a fuller life. Yeah, and he is. He's right.
Yeah.
He's out of pain. He's out of
yeah.
pain, and you're going to be with him.
Those boys running at me.
That is just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know,
like I said, we just need to focus on that legacy.
Right. Well, and I can tell you completely different story, but a completely different story. If you're listening and you had a childhood grief that you don't know how to end, I'll tell you this one quick memory. My father murdered a woman and put her in a bathroom, and he made me go back and watch as they cleaned her up in this bathtub. As an adult, when I would see that over and over, I wasn't sure how to get that memory out of my mind. And the grief of having that knife in my hand and standing in that door, I needed to get that gone. So for me, Joanne, the way that God helped me through that was, I remember one day just trying to not have it come back to me as I went to sleep. And it was like God said, yeah, come here, Jody. And he took my hand and he walked me over to that door and he shut the door and he picked me up. And you know what he told me? You never have to look in that room again. And you know what? So for me, there are ways that we can walk through grief and find closure in that beautiful way that Joanne just described. We do it with a loved one. But God also gives us these beautiful designs to see it in a way that says, I'm going to move you away from that moment in time, and you don't have to go back there. But we need closure to it. I think a lot of people, we try to do this, but I needed to close that moment. You know, there's been a lot of times I've gone back to childhood. Like, I looked down that hallway and I didn't know how to get down there. And I had to tell myself nobody was coming, but at least that was closure. So sometimes to end grief, hopefully it'd be this beautiful way that Joanne just described with a loved one. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. Unfortunately, with bad memories, that's a really difficult thing to do, but you can still allow God to paint this beautiful picture that walks you away. And you know, now when I go to that door, the door is shut and I'm in the arms of God and I can't be heard in that room anymore. So with that, we're at time. Joanne, I love you so much. And I just love spending time with you. I'm going to give you just a few minutes to say what you'd like to say. Thank you so much for your time tonight and being here with me and bringing your beautiful spirit. I really love you so much. And I'm really sorry for your loss, but I'm so glad that it just blossomed into a new thing in your life. And I'll keep you in my prayers. Go ahead and close with what you'd like to say.
Well, I appreciate you too. And I love you just as much. And, you know, I, like I said, you know, we are, you know, warrior women, and we are doing, it's not easy to do what we do. We have faced a lot of public criticism. Mm-hmm. We have lost family members. You know, we have, it's difficult, but the bottom line is we are warriors and we're made for this thing, or we are. these things created this in. And we're acting on that. And so if there's anyone out there that has gone through any of the things that Jody and I have gone through, or even worse, or, you know, and it's not like there's a comparison, for Pete's sakes, we've all been hurt and wounded.
Yes.
But there is a better life out there. And number one, acknowledging Christ as our Savior and knowing that He came. And I'll tell you a really odd story too. When my dad died, I was mad at God. And I was like, seriously, God, you couldn't have taken some pedophile or something besides my dad, you know? And God said, that pedophile is my child too. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, God, that's not fair. That's mm-hmm. not fair. But the truth is, no matter what we've done or gone through, God loves us and He is there for us. And, you know, a lot of times those people in our lives have given us the bad, you know, father image, or, you know, a bad man image. So we have men images because of, you know, those people in our lives, but He's not like that. And I have found utter solace with Him. And like you, Jody, I've had a moment when I put my inner child away as a young child to protect her from the things that I was going through, not knowing that she was still connected to me. When I went back to find her, I was in a room, the room where I did this, which, not knowing what I had done as a child. And my counselor said, I want you to go get your inner child. And when I came out, so there was a closet and it had a panel board, and I pulled the panel board out and went and got her by the hand and brought her out. And when I came out in that room, Jesus was sitting and He was kneeled. He had one knee up and one knee on the ground.
Beautiful.
And He was like, come to me, come to me. And so I brought her with me into His arms, and He brought us together. And
because we're terrified, like, still in those places. Yes.
Beautiful moment.
Yes.
Right. But he closed that door for you.
Yes.
He brought my inner child back to me. Yes. Where she was saying to me, hey, I understand. I heard it. If I didn't see it or feel it, I heard it, you know. And Christ is the same way.
Yes.
He's not abandoned you when you've gone through these things. He's heard it. He's felt it. He's seen it. He knew it before we were ever even born. And He came so that we could have life and have it abundantly. And Jody, you and I have life abundantly.
We do. It is very,
you know,
true.
We're getting it because we've
heard it. Yes.
You know,
it's,
and again,
so true.
Like that's the main focus of my book is, you know, taking a different path and finding joy in that journey. It simply means that, yeah, the things that happened to us sucked. We wouldn't have chose it if we had a choice, but it happened. And again, you can't negate it. You can't hide it. You can't bury it. You can't put it behind a wall or a rug or whatever. You can't. And when you embrace it and you say, this shit sucked, okay, but what can I do with it now?
That's
okay?
Right.
I and Jody, we're standing up and we're saying, you can do this. You can do this. You can make it through this. Reach out. Jody and I are both public. You can reach us. Talk to us. Get this off of your shoulders, because it will make a difference in your life.
That's when the healing
Absolute
begins.
Difference.
It's so true. All right. We're going to stop there. And just remember, if you want to stop a pedophile, tell their secrets. All right. Good night, everyone. See you next time.